We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius. This episode is being brought to you by Harry's Razors. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to get $3 off of your first order of razors. I am so excited. We have a special guest on this episode. This is someone who I've been following since my coaching days, who has been a huge part of my basketball education, and I'm so excited to have him on. He just did a 72-minute video, I believe, on Frank Vogel's playbooks from the Indiana Pacers and his Orlando days. And I watched all 72 of them minutes, and it was fantastic, and it was all laid out in alphabetical order by set, and it was beautiful. The one and only from Half Court Hoops, Coach Gibson Piper. Coach, it is so good to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate that very kind intro.
No, man, I'm your number one fan, man. This is super cool, and as soon as you released that, I squealed and watched it right away. I have my little notes in front of me and whatnot. Now, the nature of this type of podcast is, so in seeing plays, it's a very visual type of medium, right? This is how we normally would introduce this type of stuff, and we're limited in the scope of a podcast to do that. There's also certain terminologies. You'll hear us talk about Chicago's and hammers and things like that, that I will do my best to try to clarify, because for the sake of not talking over people's heads who aren't coaches as well. So what we want to do with this pod is go over that Vogel video and kind of discuss some big picture items so that you can come away from this podcast being like, okay, I have a better understanding of what to expect with Frank Vogel. So Coach, in doing all of that research, you've got that extensive database going back for years. What are some of your overarching impressions of Frank Vogel's sets?
The one thing that when you asked me to be on the podcast that I was thinking about that answer was, it's going to be pretty similar to Luke Walton at times. Mm-hmm. And I think Laker fans are going to have to get okay.
Everybody just yelled at their yeah.
I hope they didn't close the podcast. Stick with it. It'll be okay. But in the sense of a lot of what the NBA does is pretty similar to each other at times. So like you'll have the core plays or actions are all, you know, pretty much similar to what the other coach would do. A lot of what Vogel had in his plays and his sets, especially in Indiana, was the San Antonio Spurs influence of their motion strong and motion weak, which if you are unfamiliar with those, there are hundreds of videos on YouTube of them. I'm pretty sure you had a couple of, I think I watched a good one you had on motion weak when the Lakers first took over.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of his base, was what he ran a lot of in Indiana, primarily because he didn't really have a, let's say, a go-to playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good passers and decent players, but like Paul George was still figuring out who he was, and he's still really a great playmaker. You know, David West, Roy Hibbert, those guys aren't playmakers. So he kind of ran that free-flowing type motion that worked pretty well in Indiana because they had a really good defense built off of that. In Orlando, it was hit and miss. He did run a lot more motion weak, but as like sets and counters. So that's what would be the point guard passes to the wing and then cuts all the way through the opposite side. Mm-hmm. That kind of triggered maybe 6 to 7 different plays and counters out of that after timeout specials. I think you were going to see a little bit more of like that type series, and we will see like the normal Spurs motion weak or like a defined pattern motion.
One of the things that I got just from going through your video, and especially with the roster construction on both the Pacers and the Magic, is Vogel's had sort of two bigs as focal points of his offenses. And in Indiana, David West was a key player, as was Roy Hibbert. And then with Orlando, he had Vucevic, and then also he had Serge Ibaka and Aaron Gordon as well. Last podcast, Pete and I spoke some about the Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, LeBron James sort of being this hybrid player that can be sort of a big man and a guard as well. I was wondering what you take forward from the stuff that he did in Indiana and Orlando with sort of two big style offenses and what that might look like for the Lakers.
Yeah, I think one of the most common things he'll run is probably horns actions. Just thinking in my head of what I would do as well. Using DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis at the elbows, and also LeBron at the elbows when they put him at the four and go a little smaller, even though Anthony Davis doesn't like it. He's going to have to do it anyways. And kind of play out of the elbows and have different counters from there. A big part of this is I think Jason Kidd's going to have some influence too. And he was obsessed with elbow sets, with getting elbows.
Yeah.
If you watch his playbook, basically everything starts with almost an elbow touch for somebody. And Frank Vogel did run a lot of that kind of elbow corner action where basically put the ball in the elbow and then have a certain action off of that. I think we're going to see a lot more horn sets initially with their normal starting five, having Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins handle with the elbows and different actions off of that. We'll probably see, in my opinion, the number one, I'll call it right now, the first play of the year, they're going to throw the ball to Anthony Davis, the elbow, and have LeBron duck into the post. He ran that action all the time for his players, Paul George and Aaron Gordon in Orlando. And I think we're going to see LeBron flash from the wing into that little post duck in. It's a hard action to guard and a pretty good action with this kind of roster construction around him.
Now, regarding LeBron, one thing that I kept noticing from watching the video is I can see, Vogel ran a lot of cross screen type action that it's very easy to picture AD getting or Boogie getting, low post, deep position on those. But often in his sets, I kept thinking like this was a really good offense in 2014 in terms of the stylistic changes. And LeBron has really thrived in five out type of spacing, and a lot of Vogel sets, there are a lot of screeners, right? There's a lot of bodies down in the paint. What are your thoughts on the ability to kind of, what can Vogel do to take advantage of LeBron's shot creation abilities? Because he didn't have that type of guy, like you said, in either Orlando or Indiana, to be able to create space and driving lanes for those guys while not having all of those bodies in the paint. Because that was a consistent problem last year under Luke Walton.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see a lot more of is what the NBA terms delay series.
Yes.
Which is basically five out. It's just what they call it, basically passing the ball in the middle of the floor and then have screening action off of that, where you'll see LeBron either handle it at the top of the key or on one of the wings. But basically having just think of five out spacing, all it is just passing the ball from, the wing to the middle of the floor. And then it'll be like a down screen or a back screen or a flare screen, into a dribble handoff, into a ball screen. But that's probably going to be the primary thing I think that they'll run with having LeBron kind of handle in smaller lineups.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he did run a little bit of that in Orlando. And so you can see he kind of progressed, from there. So I think he ran five sets with delay action in it. Not really anything complicated, but basically the first one was kind of swing the ball into a ball screen. And another one was like a flare screen. Another one was like a special. I think one was a special for Maurice Spates in Orlando for a flare screen.
For the pick and pops, yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll see some stuff like that with AD and LeBron, but just more action of getting the ball moving side to side with a little bit of down screens. But ultimately, when you're talking about LeBron, he can handle the ball anywhere and be able to make a play. But I think the best way to utilize him is having him handle in the middle of the floor and then having that screening action off of him.
It's interesting to me because there was this leak, you know, within the last couple of weeks about LeBron playing point guard. Based off of what you've seen from Vogel's offenses, do you think that that would be optimizing LeBron as him being like the guy who's bringing the ball up and initiating offensive sets? Or would it make more sense to use him initially as an off-ball player in order to come back into position as sets are developing in front of him rather than the guy who's initiating them?
I think it won't matter because LeBron has developed this system where he will get the ball anyways and just sure. Walk it up and save his breath. He'll burn 10, 15 seconds off the shot clock just by controlling the pace and tempo and then run a ball screen or an action or whatever he wants to do. So ultimately, you know, we could say, I think it's a little bit overblown to say LeBron's playing point guard. That will never be his mindset or his mentality. You're not going to see him bring the ball up the court, running a drag screen in transition.
Right.
Crazy. But he will get the ball, you know, after a made basket, he'll get the ball and bring it up, and he'll be the point guard in that scenario. When people think of point guards, we think of like Chris Paul and Steph Curry and, you know, James Harden now, where they're controlling it and calling plays and doing all that. And LeBron's done that his whole career anyways. So you can call it whatever you want. You can call it point center, point four. And LeBron's going to have the ball in his hand a lot because he's so good at controlling the game. And he's so intelligent that if you're a coach, you want to encourage that. You know, you don't want LeBron not to want the ball. The one of the areas that I think is going to be interesting, though, is off the ball, what's LeBron's mentality? Because he's getting older, you know, you're not going to see him be a tremendous cutter anymore. I mean, it's too taxing during the regular season to see that consistently. So using him maybe as a screener or posting him up more, I think we'll see more of that action versus kind of LeBron moving around, you know, like an off-ball movement.
Yeah, there are a lot of those like three down type of sets that they got into that a few different variations. And basically three down is just a way of posting up your small forward, right? And there's a cross screen usually that will happen in that and some ball reversal with the goal of establishing deep position on that. So there are some good, like, you know, LeBron posting up sets that I saw in your video. One guy that I'm very curious about that stood out in a lot of the actions that he ran were very off-screen shooter-centric. They were kind of the first option on these plays. He did it for Paul George, and then probably to, you know, not quite as effective of a degree with Evan Fournier, got a lot of those looks in Orlando, or at least from the video that you made. Where does Danny Green fit into what Vogel does? Because in a lot of ways, I feel like your set plays are very contingent upon how much of a threat your shooter is coming off of screens.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we're going to see, like you're talking about, those actions for Danny Green and even Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you know, to an extent. I think he's pretty solid at coming off of screens, in my opinion. But the problem is Danny Green really, like, when you watch him in the last year especially, when he comes off the screen, there's just not the same acceleration. You know, he's just older. He's not gonna have the same kind of, I guess, ability to come off and catch and shoot as quick as he normally would. He's probably more best served to be used as a ball screener for LeBron. I think we're gonna see a lot more of that because yes. LeBron loved to do that. But I think we're gonna still see. So like last year, Luke Walton would run those quick pin downs and quick stagger screens for, you know, KCP. Mm-hmm. It's the same action that Frank Vogel ran. It's just a different player.
Right.
So I think we're going to see, you know, the similar kind of quick hitters, you know, kind of that a quick pin down or a quick stagger, strong action, or double screen off the ball for Danny Green. I think that's normal. I think we'll see that for, you know, all the shooters and just maybe even just get the offense moving initially.
How are Vogel's teams at the counters to those type of plays? Because that was one thing that stood out to me. There was not a lot of, you know, somebody locking and trailing and then, you know, somebody slipping a screen or something like that. And things were kind of stagnant on the weak side. That was something that I noticed, but I have not dug into the tape to the extent that you have. What are your impression of like the counters in those type of actions?
Yeah, the hard part in Orlando is teams weren't very good.
Sure.
So like the counters, even if they read it right, I mean, they still aren't very talented compared to their opponents, you know?
Sure.
So it's like, it's really difficult to see what his vision was, like, after the first action failed, just because the second and third action would usually fail as well.
sure.
Then it would just go to a spread ball screen or, you know, a high pick and roll, which is what most of the NBA does. So it's a little bit difficult. In Indiana, obviously, it was a little bit more motion based, so it was a little more, you know, triggering based on those reads and a little bit more talent to do that. But in Orlando, it was hard to kind of get a feel for that exact.
One of the things that was interesting to me as I watched your video and sort of saw all of the different types of actions were all of the different influences that Vogel seemed to have within his offense, right? So you had talked about motion weak earlier, but I saw some triangle action as well. And I actually think that this roster would be interesting with some of those actions, especially with the post players that the Lakers could have and the passing ability that those post players have as well. Vogel had mentioned that Phil Jackson was sort of an influence on his coaching, but more from a coaching demeanor standpoint. But did you see any of that influence sort of come out in his playbook as well? And if so, do you see any of that being applicable to this Lakers roster?
It would be tough to, I think, sell LeBron on that, in my opinion, just because LeBron, I mean, I'm a Cavs fan, just for clarification. I've watched LeBron obsessively for the past, you know, 4 years and before that. So, like, you have this great idea in theory of, like, what an offense could be around him. But the only real actualization of that has been in Miami when he was in his prime and he was willing to do that and they had the personnel to do that. In Cleveland, they just put shooters around him and that was the system and that was perfect because he had a sidekick in Kyrie who could score when he didn't want to. And then, so it's like getting, you know, this LeBron to run that system would probably be a little bit harder of a sell, just because, I mean, I'm not an expert on the triangle, but a lot of it is focused on reversing the ball and reads and counters and playing out of the elbows like that. But I just think it would be a hard thing to do at this juncture of LeBron's career. And all of this that we're talking about applies to that as well. Like, it could be a great playbook and Vogel could be, you know, a genius now and he could have studied and learned a lot. But at the end of the day, when LeBron's on your team, you just kind of give him the ball most of the time and get out of the way.
So this is great stuff. I did not know that you were a Cavs fan. So we're going to take a quick little break and I've got some LeBron questions for you when we come back on the other end of it. But in the meantime, go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all of that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's is fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with a quality and durable blade at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and you'll get a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3. And that's the first time I've ever gotten through that ad read without making mistake. I had to play it up for coach. You know, you gotta impress the coach. So I am so friggin' fired up right now. Sasha's not gonna have to chop that up. All right. So LeBron, there is a narrative that is, I think, true to some extent that LeBron has a habit of relegating talented big guys into being spot up shooters. Chris Bosh and Kevin Love. Do you buy into that? And if so, to whatever degree, how do the Lakers avoid doing that with Anthony Davis and, to a lesser extent, DeMarcus Cousins?
It for sure is true, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I think it's going to happen this year.
Interesting.
I mean, that's just in my opinion, when you have somebody like LeBron, now it may be different this year. Let me backtrack a little bit because I'm thinking about that more. It may be different this year because he'll be more willing to let Anthony Davis do his thing. Mm-hmm. But I think DeMarcus Cousins is going to struggle the first month of the season, 2 months of the season, just to get back in game shape and playing shape and, you know, trying to get back to who he was and fit in with this team. So mm-hmm. I think that's going to, in LeBron, when he's looking, he's always analyzing, figuring out what you can do right now. And as soon as he sees that, and if he struggles, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever, I think LeBron will just kind of brushed out to the side and take over a little more. But I think at this point, LeBron wants to probably give some of that control up, at least regular season. But I think in the playoffs is when you'll see him take over more and have those guys spot up more often than not and kind of take over, just because he's not, it's not a negative. Like, people are making it a lot of times, they like to make it seem like LeBron is telling Kevin Love to get in the corner. He doesn't want to talk to him anymore. Like, like that's not how that works. What he's doing is he's creating space for him to operate. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's, and he may not like him. I don't really know. I don't really care. But in the game of basketball, if you're the best player, you want to operate in space. You know, I always use this analogy with my team is like, if you're a wide receiver in football, you have to run your route every time, like you're going to catch the ball. You just have to, because you're going to maybe occupy the defense more. Well, it's the same thing in basketball. You have to be ready to catch and shoot. You have to sprint to your space. You have to cut like you're going to score every time. You have to do those things so LeBron can go score a layup. And LeBron scores 30, has 30, 15, and 12, and is an MVP candidate, and you don't look as good as you once were because you're standing in the corner. So it's like, can you live with that? Yeah, because you're probably going to be in championship contention if you can just do your job.
My argument, so this is my pro, you know, Laker fan. We just acquired this guy, and I want to see the optimistic in it. The argument that I've had against that, and I'm curious on your thoughts about this, is that AD is the first guy that he's had that's been both a vertical threat off of ball screens and a pick and pop type of option. And he's okay at pick and pop. He's not great, but he's at least, you have to respect his abilities from there. Whereas guys like Bosch, was not as, you know, Bosch was more of a give him the ball on the elbow in Toronto, right, and let him go to work on ball. He was less of a role threat, as was the case with Love in Minnesota. Again, this is me as an optimistic Laker fan. Is AD's ability to be a Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love hybrid in that respect, does that, even with him as the second option, whereas those guys were kind of the third option type of guys, does that help mitigate that? Or do you still think that is kind of the natural inclination of LeBron, is to spread the floor in that way? And like you said, it's not necessarily a bad thing, that just that being the result, even with AD's increased versatility over those guys.
Yeah, I think that is a great optimistic view to have. And I'm really proud for having that, because it's not going to be that way. It'll be AD lob roll to the basket, and he'll dunk on somebody, and then the next time they switch the ball screen.
That's my biggest worry is switching.
And then what do you do? You either dump it to AD in the post or LeBron's ISO one-on-one. Where does AD go? Where does DeMarcus Cousins go?
Right.
You know, I don't have any charting of this or anything. It'd be interesting to look at just to see like how many times they got Kevin Love in a switch and he went and stood in the corner versus post up or, you know, Bosch, and just maybe that's something interesting to look at, because it's not always by like LeBron rushing them into the corner. Sometimes the game forces you to do that. So, you know, that's the only thing. If I'm opposing coach, I say, hey, you know, we'll drop the first, you know, whatever, we'll drop on this ball screen coverage again, LeBron and AD, make a mid-range jumper, you know, don't give up a roll. The second or third dunk or LeBron three, you just start switching it. That's what the scouting report in my mind would be. And when you play the best teams, they're just going to switch it. In the playoffs, they're just going to switch it. So what do you do then?
I'm hoping the Lakers have a certain degree of overwhelming size. Again, this is the optimist point of view, but there's a lot of ability to beat switches in the front court. I'm curious to see if you can do that in 2019, 2020. But with Boogie, AD was very good last year, and in the tape that I've watched of taking advantage of those mismatches when he had them, there was less reason to switch. But I do think he's capable. Their front court is capable of doing some damage against those switches. But again, I do have those concerns. Switching is probably my biggest concern with this roster.
Yeah, I think it's just ultimately what's going to happen. I mean, especially you're going to come across an opponent. Like, let's say you play the Warriors, Draymond can switch. You play the Rockets, they're going to switch everything this year. I mean, that you're going to come across somebody that's just going to switch everything against you in the playoffs. And it's like, what do you do then? And good news is you have LeBron. Bad news is AD and DeMarcus Cousins might not look as good.
One of the things, so we're talking about switching a lot and LeBron being the primary ball handler a lot, and I'm 100% in agreement actually with sort of how you see some of this developing, not necessarily from a pessimistic standpoint, but because I think LeBron is still good enough to beat defenses the exact way that you're talking about it playing out. I'm also interested, though, in your thoughts on Anthony Davis and his ability to beat defenses like his own man, and some of what you see of LeBron and his willingness to sort of play the same role that you were talking about AD playing for LeBron, to sort of create space and be somewhat of an off-ball threat as a three-point shooter, which he's improved at greatly over the second half of his career, and let Anthony Davis go to work against power forwards and centers, his own man, right, before switches. Because some of the things I saw from the video that you did was Vogel sort of creating a lot of action to create isolation for his big men. And I'm wondering how you see that working on the other side of the coin to sort of get Davis going.
Yeah, I think they'll do that a lot, especially because he's the second fiddle right now. You know, like LeBron's going to be the main guy, but AD is going to have to do some scoring and some playmaking as well. In Cleveland, they actually posted up every single game. They started with a Kevin Love post up. You know, they would always try to throw him the ball as early as possible. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens with AD too. One of the things I think we'll see more of is getting a couple of those smaller guards to set those cross screens and down screens for him to get him coming off going downhill. And then if they can't switch it because that's an automatic mismatch, and then have LeBron space in the corner. The problem that is going to arise eventually with that is going to be LeBron, when he catches the ball in the corner, is he going to be a shooter or a driver this year? You know, like, because it's some years he's a driver. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get because he might be struggling to shoot the ball a little bit. It's going to be where a scouting report will say LeBron's not going to want to cut as much off the ball. That might be the automatic trap guy. And if that's where the automatic trap's coming from, you're basically banking on the weakest three-point shooter in LeBron on the floor, in allowing him to maybe catch and shoot or contest that catch and shoot opportunity. That's one of the main issues I think that could come around. Now, if they play two bigs, that's going to jam up a little bit of space. Yeah. So then the automatic trap guy might be DeMarcus Cousins, and you're making him shoot it, which is why I think in all this conversation, we're going to see less two big lineups than we anticipate.
I'm 100% on that, because I don't think that trio, for all of these reasons that you're mentioning, is going to be part of the Lakers' best five, even if they are all, you know, amongst the Lakers' best five players. Just the spacing of Boogie, AD, and LeBron can definitely be problematic. And yeah, their coaches are going to be banking on, you know, will be helping off of, especially Boogie if he's on the perimeter. AD, I think you have to respect to a certain degree, but he said just yesterday, clear as day, like, I don't like playing the five, and I'll do it if I have to. But I do think that's where the Lakers' best lineups are going to be. Coach, I wanted to bring it back to the playbook a little bit. What are your thoughts on Frank Vogel's ATOs? For listeners, ATOs are after timeout plays. This is one of the places where coaches get to be most schematically heavy in the situations coming out of timeouts and dead ball type of situations. What are your thoughts on Vogel in there?
I think he's good. I mean, he's solid. He's not... Nothing really blew me away. You know, I've pretty much seen every set almost. Let's see. I'm trying to think. There was probably two or three sets that I hadn't seen before, which, I mean, that's not a great ratio considering I watched like 6 years of film. That's not awesome. And a lot of his after timeouts from Indiana did carry over to Orlando, which is an interesting choice. I just think maybe just because of talent, it just was easier for him to run the same stuff he'd been running. One of the things I did like, though, was you could see a little bit of evolution in his after timeout sets. So in Indiana, he ran a horn set into a pin down into a dribble handoff, which we call horn Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so in Indiana, that was just a normal handoff for Paul George. And then in Orlando, they ran that same action, but into Spain action.
Yeah, that was, I have that written down, the horns flex Chicago Spain. That was a beautiful play.
Yeah, that was one of the great plays where I was watching it. And, you know, I watch a lot of film, so I don't always get too excited when I watch film because I've seen a lot of it. But like when I saw that, I was like, yes. Like,
yeah, yes. No, that was, I did the same thing. I have it written down right in front of me. It was my favorite play. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that was a good thing to see where like he's using. And for those that are listening, Spain is just what I term a ball screen, and then a guard is setting a back screen on the big who is guarding the ball screen. It probably sounds confusing if you look it up on my YouTube. There's a lot of examples of that. It'll make it a little more clear, but essentially causes a lot of confusion because there's not really anybody to tag the roll man. You're setting a back screen on the big who's guarding a ball screen. So he's preoccupied guarding a ball screen, not worried about the back screen.
Yeah.
It's just a really tough action to guard that. I mean, it's run by everybody now and it started over in Europe. And so that was great to see, you know, him kind of develop those newer kind of plays, I guess, if you want to call it that, some of the newer actions. So that was cool. But I mean, there wasn't a ton of variety. And as I'm even looking through the list right now, there's a lot of similar plays that most NBA teams are running them right now.
I actually wanted to get back to a player that we haven't mentioned yet because he sort of reminds me of, he's not as good as Paul George, and he might be a little bit closer to like an Aaron Gordon type, the way at least that Vogel used him. But Kyle Kuzma, I feel like, is an interesting player based off of the types of sets that Vogel's run and how he might fit into them as sort of that hybrid forward who is good on the move. He can come off screen some. He can post up some. Do you see him, based off of his skill set and what you know of Kuzma and what Vogel likes to run, as maybe being a pretty important player for how the Lakers and Vogel may want to run offense this season?
Important in the sense of him setting ball screens, yeah.
Explain that if you would, Coach.
Yeah, I'll go in a little more detail. So what LeBron will do is basically find the mismatch. And if you look at, you know, who would be the fifth guy? Let's say we throw out LeBron, Kuzma, AD, and DeMarcus Cousins. And let's say, KCP.
Danny Green.
Yeah, just
another shooter, right? I'm just thinking a random lineup in the middle of a game. In that lineup, who is the worst defender going to be on? Probably Kuzma, right? So then LeBron sees that, you know, and calls him over for a ball screen, tries to get a switch, get a mismatch. If Kuzma can run a ball screen with LeBron, that brings the Lakers to a whole nother level, because that's what LeBron's done for the past six years. He's so used to just finding the weakest guy and bringing him into a ball screen. So that's where, and even Danny Green, you know, KCP, Avery Bradley, those type of guys are going to have to understand what LeBron's looking for in the pick and pop situations, getting those guards in the ball screens. Now, I think, you know, in my opinion, I think Kyle Kuzma is going to have a really hard time this year. He is going to be at times the fifth option on the floor. Can he be patient enough and become a really good spot up shooter to where he's just focusing on catch and shoot opportunities? I don't know. I got to be honest. I have not studied him as obsessively as other players. I just have a feeling that mentally at where he is right now, mentally, that's a really hard thing to do. Danny Green can do it. Jared Dudley can do it. Avery Bradley can probably do it. You know, those guys have all kind of been around ball dominant players at times, so they can kind of relax a little bit and be ready for their opportunity. But I think Kuzma, you know, coming off of some of those stagger screens and pin down screens, if he can learn how to use those, then LeBron has an easier time getting him the ball. But if not, we're going to see more ball screens, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's something I've been thinking as well regarding Kuz. I think, Kuz, you mentioned about Boogie being somebody who might struggle at the beginning of the year. From speaking to Vogel and from hearing what Boogie has had to say, I don't think Boogie's going to start out in the starting lineup. And I actually think Kuz is the guy that I think is going to have that adjustment period that you were talking about early on. Boogie may still have that coming off of the bench, but I do think that, you know, Kuz is coming from two seasons where he was like, one of the biggest issues he had was shot selection, right? We're just letting shots fly as really the only credible scoring option next to LeBron that could operate off of the ball. Ingram had some on-ball ability, but Kuz did a lot of his work as a cutter coming off of screens. He shot the ball very poorly last year, but he operates more off of the ball, and him and LeBron had a good chemistry together, but he might not be LeBron's right-hand man. In fact, it's very, very unlikely with Anthony Davis out there that will be the case. So I'm very curious to see how Kuz adjusts to that. From an overall team type of standpoint. Let's go in this direction. I'm curious on your thoughts, because again, through watching much of your video, one of the things that kept coming up was like, this is very 2014 style of offense, which is not a pejorative when it was Indiana and it was in 2014. I thought that in Orlando, I thought part of it was talent for sure, but I thought part of it was kind of, I don't want to say antiquated concepts, but the game's changed a lot over the last 5 years. And I'm curious, in all of the tape, you've been doing this for a long time, what are the things that you notice most from a schematic standpoint of how is the game different from just, say, 5 years ago versus today?
I think the number one thing is just the understanding of what shots are more valuable. Yeah. I think that's a huge, huge part of it, just because, you know, you're going to see teams are not running like the Warriors offense. They're not running, you know, the Raptors offense. They're not running a pace and space style, but they're still seeking out shots that are highly, you know, higher in value. So obviously the least valuable right now is that longer mid range. So that's why you see a lot of teams are going to drop ball screen coverage to counter that. And I think the biggest problem with, you know, some of like this team construction here is actually not that bad, because I'm not looking around and seeing like who's going to take a lot of long twos. Mm-hmm. So when you're building an offense, especially in the NBA, is you're basically trying to create layups and corner threes. That's the main goal is in today's NBA, you know, in the league, how you do that is very, very different than when you did, you know, 5 years ago. 5 years ago, it was like, you know, come down and just throw the ball in the post and hopefully they double, or hopefully you can, you know, score. Well, now it's still throw the ball in the post at times, but then it's run a split cut, run a flare, you know, run slips, run cutters off of that. It's a lot more off ball movement and a lot more, you know, side to side movement overall. The biggest thing is there's multiple ways to win basketball games in the NBA, especially. I mean, you look at just the Rockets versus the Warriors, could not be two more contrasting styles. And even the Clippers and the Warriors, still very contrasting. You know, the Clippers run the most ball screens, the Warriors don't. So it's all about how you're going to get your team to buy into that vision, whatever the vision is. And so 5 years ago, it was more simple, as in the ISOs would end up in twos. This in 2019, the ISOs end up in threes. So it's just understanding of where the best shots are and how to get those in today's more analytically driven NBA.
Well, Coach, this was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Can you tell our listeners where they can find your amazing work that I've been following for years and years? And promote whatever you got, my man.
All right, for sure. The easiest is Twitter, at Half Court Hoops. I'm on there every day. I'm usually available every day if you want to chat and hit me up. And then I have YouTube. That's also Half Court Hoops. And then I have my website, thebasketballplaybook.com, because halfcourthoops.com was not available, so I had to switch that up. but it's basically on there. I have the basketball playbook. I have a lot of actual playbooks for sale. I have my membership stuff, and then I have all of the plays on there organized as well for a little bit easier viewing. YouTube, I mean, I have, you know, 1,200 videos on there, so it's a little bit harder to navigate. But if you're looking for any more information or any basketball talk, have Twitter, Half Court Hoops is the best way to contact me.
Yeah, if you're coaching youth league or high school or just want to learn more about the game and provide coverage, you know, similar to how, you know, I've done with LFR and Darius has done with Form Blue and Gold, and just like a deeper knowledge set, Half Court Hoops is absolutely invaluable to your basketball education. So please check him out. Coach, thank you so much for coming on. You guys have been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast, and we will catch you next time.
Give me a chance to think. It takes me a little while to get warmed up.
I know it does take you a while to think.
Rebound to Vlade. Nice rebound to Vlade.
Oh, Magic ahead and shoulder fake. Goes under and scores. What a standing ovation. Listen to the crowd.
I think that is a cosmetic call, baby.
Okay, kid, you're all right in my book. Will you get these idiots out of here?
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.